Nginx can serve several of the key roles in a microservices architecture: sidecar proxy into service mesh, ingress controller for Kubernetes, or both, while providing features like load balancing, service discovery, caching, and more. Deliver modern applications at scale. Learn more at nginx.com.
Hello and welcome to the InfoQ podcast. I'm Daniel Bryant, news manager here at InfoQ and director of DevRel at Ambassador Labs. For this edition of the podcast, we're doing our traditional end of year review with all of the InfoQ family of podcast hosts. I'm privileged to be joined by colleagues Wes Rice, creator of the InfoQ Architecture podcast and platform architect at VMware, Charles Humble, a technical leader, freelance writer, and distinguished contributor at InfoQ, and Shane Hasty, creator of the InfoQ Engineering Culture podcast and director of community development at IC Agile. There's no denying this year has been strange and challenging on many levels, and so we were keen to reflect back on our experiences and learning. We wanted to discuss the impact of COVID on tech, the challenges of working and leading in a distributed context, and also explore how we all need to take time out to look after ourselves, our teammates, and those around us. And from a technical perspective, we were keen to look briefly at the continued rise of cloud platforms, the recent Docker deprecation notice in Kubernetes, and also look back on our first inaugural KubeCon Plus event that took place over 3 weeks in November. The next one of these events is scheduled for May 2021, and you can find out more information at plus.qconferences.com. So welcome everyone to the Year in Review InfoQ podcast. Before we get started, can we quickly introduce ourselves, please, and give an overview of what you've been up to over the last year as well?
Good day, folks. I'm Shane Hasty. I'm the lead editor for Culture and Methods at InfoQ.com, based in New Zealand. And this, what have I been up to the last year? Getting through the insanity that has been 2020. I'm incredibly fortunate to live in New Zealand. We're a society that has exhibited, in many ways, the agile mindset and has adapted to the challenges of the year, I suspect, better than some.
So I'm Charles Humble. I was InfoQ's editor-in-chief until April of this year. And since then, I've been basically working as a freelancer. I've been working with New Relic, and I've also been doing some work with Container Solutions, where I started as a content consultant, and I'm now acting as kind of managing editor for some of their educational content on cloud native. So yeah, that's me. Wes, how about you?
So I'm Wes Rice. Been 4 years now doing the InfoQ podcast and also chairing some KubeCons, just recently KubeCon Plus. In my day job, I work for VMware, so I'm a platform architect in the Modern Applications Business Unit. So that's just the group that works on Spring and K8s around cloud native, app modernization, those kind of things. That's me, Daniel.
Yeah, so this year I've moved more into DevRel at Ambassador Labs, still looking after the news at InfoQ as well. That's pretty much it. Lots of focus on Kubernetes, lots of focus on building platforms at the moment. And it's been a strange year, as we've all said, definitely. But lots of opportunity for connecting with folks one-on-one online. And that has been the sort of the savior that's kept me going. I've definitely missed the conferences, for example, and the connecting with all yourselves and other folks as well. That's something I'm looking forward to getting back to when we can. On that note, what are the most important interesting trends from 2020?
You can't start with mentioning 2020 without COVID, right? So in my house, we celebrate Christmas. And so every year we get ornaments to describe kind of the year in summary for us. And I really believe this year my ornament, I haven't got it yet, but my ornament is going to be a dumpster fire because I think that's what 2020 truly represents to me. But yeah, COVID has affected everybody in just ways that we can't even begin to imagine. And I've seen it in tech that's kind of come up, how tech's responded. There's some people that we could name, but there's so many people that you could name that have been seriously affected by this and lost their lives, their family. I don't think I'll mention any specific names. But yeah, just COVID, how software's responded, how it's forced us to work from home. At some point, I want to talk a bit about AlphaFold, for example, and how some software is being used to help address COVID. But for me, I think COVID and the response and the work from home is the thing that 2020 really is most definitive in my mind.
I'll pick up on that one. There's the meme for organizations. What has influenced your digital transformation the most? And the tick boxes for chief executive, chief technology officer, chief information officer. And the reality is for pretty much every organization today, the thing that's influenced their digital transformation has got to be COVID. The way that organizations have responded, the fact that IT departments were able to allow people to start working from home effectively within a week or two of a lockdown. And these were big organizations for whom the concept of remote work was just not there. And yeah, it was chaotic at the beginning, but the way that the tech support community and the tech community as a whole stepped up to provide the services that we're there for, to support the rest of the world, to enable the economies to continue. Yes, huge impact, but we did continue. We've come through it. The comparisons, you know, thinking about what happened, none of us were there, but what we hear of the 1918 pandemic versus stay home and watch Netflix and be able to stay home and watch Netflix.
I think that's very true. And one thing that's been really positive is the way the platforms that we all increasingly rely on have been able to scale and meet this sudden huge surge of demand, which no one was predicting, even in like February, March of this year, no one was predicting it. And actually, we don't really acknowledge companies like Slack, companies like Zoom, Google Classroom, Khan Academy, all of these different organizations that have in different ways allowed people to keep going, and they've suddenly had to scale up their infrastructure. And actually, I think on the whole, we notice things when they go wrong. And I think it's an enormous advert for the IT industry as a whole that it's actually equipped itself, I think, remarkably well under incredibly difficult circumstances. And on the whole, things have kept working. People have been able to carry on doing things. People have been able to switch to working at home. And that's a big deal. That's not to say that there aren't problems. That's not to say that there aren't huge challenges for individuals. But I think collectively as an industry, it reminds me a little bit of the year 2K thing, if you're old enough to remember that one, where I think as an industry, we just kind of went in and did our thing and sorted it out. And then everyone went, oh, it probably wasn't a big problem anyway. Yeah, it really was. I worked on some of those things, and some of them were not great. But as an industry, we kind of stepped up and fixed it. And this has felt like one of those moments again, where I think we've done pretty well under very, very challenging circumstances. So yeah, I think it's been good from that point of view. I think as well, it's interesting because it's like a forcing function. You have to adopt these new ways of working and so on. There's not really a lot of stuff that we're doing that we couldn't have been doing 2 or 3 years ago. The innovation, sort of new remote working tools, I imagine will come 2 or 3 years hence. But the sudden rapid adoption of all kinds of new things, new ways of working, new ways of thinking has been quite interesting. And, you know, if you take events as an example, we could have been running remote events or online events years ago, but we weren't. And suddenly we are. And it turns out that that actually works quite well. And we were able to do it quite quickly. I long to go back to in-person events, but I think it's interesting that you can make that work in the meantime.
I think at that point, Charles, it's a good opportunity to shout out QCon Plus as well. Wes, you led the charge on that one, and I thoroughly enjoyed watching it over the last few weeks. We've kind of wrapped up now, and everyone was super generous in donating their time, you know, getting involved with a slightly different platform. I'm sure you want to do a big shout out for all the folks that made that possible.
Yeah, definitely. So it's the first time we've ran it. 1,100 people, I think, was the total number. We had over 100 speakers, just a really great experience. Ran over 3 weeks, kind of formed around the Pacific time zone, so around lunchtime. So we ran for a couple hours, but we ran literally for 3 weeks. It was a lot of learning that was kind of pitching for you too, Daniel, because you're about to kick off the next one.
Yeah, I think it's really nice to see everyone, to Charles's point there, everyone come together, like the platform scaling, Zoom and Slack, I've been 100% dependent on them, but it was really nice to see others in the community still donating their time. Because, you know, let's be honest, we've all got family, you know, you want to spend more time with friends and connecting, and to generously donate some of your working cycles or your non-working cycles to create content, to learn how to present it in a new way. You know, you're talking to a wall, talking to a webcam versus an audience. It's completely different, right? So I'm really grateful for all the folks at QCon Plus and folks contributing to InfoQ, jumping on podcasts, writing articles for us. That's kept us going over the last 9 months. Like, it'd be very easy for folks not to do it. And I really appreciate all the folks that have taken the time to contribute.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to come back to this because all of us have done talks virtually and have helped other people and planned it. And I'm sure we all have some tips and tricks that would help. But you asked a question that was about interesting trends. And obviously COVID is something that we needed to address. But beyond COVID, Daniel, what were you thinking and things that were top trends in 2020?
Yeah, interesting, Wes. So for me, I've been doing a lot of work this year in building cloud platforms. So I've got to give a shout out actually to Matthew Skelton and Manuel Pace. Manuel was an editor at InfoQ as well. They both wrote a fantastic book called Team Topologies. Now, I'm bumping into this everywhere I go. Every conference, DevOps focused, be it super tech focused, be it agile, culture methods. it's really interesting way of thinking about structuring your organization to build and offer effective platforms. So for me, that's been kind of the sort of organizational platform aspect. And I think in the cloud space, you know, Kubernetes is getting even more dominant. I think we mentioned last year, Kubernetes being the foundation of many a platform. We're seeing lots of interesting movement around distros. Like just a couple of weeks ago, Amazon have talked about their EKS version of Kubernetes, EKSD. They're packaging that as a Kubernetes distro. Rancher were acquired by SUSE. There's a bunch of interesting sort of movement in the space that's saying now the interesting platform work is going on above Kubernetes in addition to Kubernetes. So I think that is, you know, is super interesting.
I couldn't agree any more than Kubernetes is just the foundation now. It is the de facto standard. And, you know, in the same space, there's some interesting news that we might want to take a second and talk a bit about. And that's specifically kind of the news just recently that Kubernetes is going to be deprecating Docker as a runtime in 1.20. What are your thoughts about that? Is it sky falling?
Yeah, I don't think so, Wes. I know you've got some really good ideas around the tech side. One thing I'll add to the start of the conversation is I saw a great tweet by Gareth Rushgrove, who runs DevOps Weekly. We should all follow Gareth for sure on Twitter. And he basically said, don't worry, it's 1.20. Like in reality, that version is not going to be rolled out for 18 months, like for most on-premises in the cloud. And even then, it's only being deprecated. It's not sort of completely stops overnight. So I think classic social media situation, everyone got a bit excited. You know, I'm guilty of that sometimes as well. And you just got to calm down, look through the facts. Yeah, I think that's my high-level takeaway. Whereas I know you've looked into a bit more of the tech behind the scenes.
Just to kind of dovetail on what you said, it is with 1.20 that it'll be deprecated, but actually targeted for removal. I believe it was 1.22. And if you actually read the blog post that was talking about announcing this, in the very first paragraph, it says, it's not as bad as it sounds. But the gist of it is just that Docker makes a lot of things that have great UX enhancements for humans to be able to interact with doing this development work around containers. But those UX enhancements aren't necessarily great for running it packaged inside of Kubernetes. So this like human-friendly abstraction layer that's there requires that Docker has to put in Docker shim into it so that it can really run with things like containerd do with that container runtime environment. So this basically is just because Docker isn't that CRI compliant container runtime. So other ones are CRO, containerd. So like when we get to my New Year's resolutions, it's going to be dive into containerd. That'll be one of my New Year's resolutions. But I think the long and the short is literally if you go back to the blog post announcing it, it says it's not as bad as it sounds. It's still some time off. You can still run Docker. It's just because we're trying to kind of make things more standard compliant. And there's a few things out there that do.
No, that's good stuff, Wes. And I'll be sure to link in the show notes all the good blog posts because I saw Charles tweeting online as well saying often you got to cut through the noise and find the signal. And we can definitely help folks do that. That's what we do at InfoQ. It's what we do at QCon. So I think that's a really, really good point. I wanted to pivot a little bit because the tech is super important. But something I've really benefited from this year is both Shane and Charles, your knowledge around remote working, remote onboarding. I know, Charles, you've worked for ages remote and really, you know, led remote, worked as an individual contributor remote. You've done it all. And Shane, you've taught it all. So I've learned a lot from both of you. I wonder if you could sort of give us a high level overview of what you think folks should pay attention to, where they should learn, what things they can benefit from.
It's really interesting. Yes, remote work has been a thing. We've been doing it for years. And yet something I think we have to bear in mind is that the remote that we've been thrown into, that the world has been thrown into this year, is different. Those of us who've been working remotely for a long time, we're not releasing the video, but I've got a separate dedicated office. I think all three of us, all four of us on this call are sitting in spaces that we're not sharing with anyone else in the family. We haven't got the children who are doing homeschooling at the same time. We've got not sitting at a dining room table, sharing that table and sharing one computer in the house between two people who are trying to work. So the forced remote is different. But what it has done is it's shown organizations that remote works, that we can actually do it, that it is an option. And we put news out earlier on talking about the big tech giants moving away from the policy of everyone needs to be in person to actually we've seen this remote work. So yeah, you can in the future. Big change that I think is going to come from this is a shift away even from some of the concentration of people in specific areas. So allowing work to happen literally from anywhere. Again, those of us who've done it for a while have known that this works, but now it's visible to the rest of the world. But with that, and this is something that we looked at in the engineering culture space a lot, was the mental health issues, the psychological safety. How do we set that up to be okay? And when you're not seeing people walking down the passage, you're not seeing their body language, how do you know that they're okay? Really important to be able to change your leadership model and style. And Charles, your thoughts on management and leadership in this space?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. One of the standard responses to why we don't do remote working is because we worry that people won't work as hard or won't work as much when we can't see what they're doing. And it turns out that that's just not true at any level. And actually what tends to happen, if anything, is people work harder. And that's not necessarily a good thing. I think one of the most important things you can be doing as a manager is actually making sure that you're watching out for the email that comes in from your employee at 11 o'clock at night, or the Slack message that comes in late at night or very early in the morning. Those kind of signals that people are starting to do strange hours and work outside of time. And is that really necessary? Because working hard does not in and of itself necessarily lead to burnout, but it's definitely a danger signal. And I think it's something that it's very, very tempting when you're just, oh, I'll just quickly do that email. Oh, I'll just quickly debug that bit of code. I'll just quickly upload that thing to AWS, whatever it is. I think it's a pattern that's very common and very dangerous. And so oddly enough, I think one of the things as a leader or as a manager you need to be doing is not worrying about, are my employees working enough, but rather worrying about, are my employees working too much, which is quite counterintuitive. The other thing I think is that absolute vitalness of feedback and one-on-one meetings and all these things that we know are good practices in like physical offices are good practice, but they are absolutely essential when you're working remotely. Have a one-on-one meeting with everybody who reports to you and make space in that one-on-one to have a conversation about, well, how are you? No, how are you really? And get deep into that stuff. Because again, particularly with a background of a pandemic and the world is on fire and everything is awful, a lot of people are frankly not doing very well for all kinds of reasons. Your extrovert friends who haven't been able to go out for months and see people are not having a good time right now. Any of them. That sort of stuff I think is really, really important. And for companies that have done remote working forever, most of them end up with some sort of thing that revolves around an in-person event. So like C4 Media would have the QCons. It also has like an all-hands meeting where everybody gets together. And suddenly all of that has gone. And I think for some companies that have done remote work forever, that loss of personal connected time is something that's very easy to kind of miss and not realize it's a problem, but it really is. And you really need to make space for some kind of online offsite. Can you have an online offsite? But you know what I mean.
That's a huge thing to tease out. Like what we're doing right now is not what we were doing a year ago when work from home. And a lot of people, a lot of the things that I've seen on Twitter that pushed back against it, that are calling out some of the problems. I think it's really important to recognize this is work from home during a pandemic. And there are things that, as you kind of just mentioned, Charles, like when you and I worked together for 3 or 4 years, several times a year, we got together. I saw you more than I saw many people in my family, not my household, but in my family. So even though we were working from home or working remote, we had those defined check-in points where there were the interaction. That's gone. I haven't seen any of us in person since March. So that real interaction is missing. And I think that is a weight that is on all of us. And that goes back to that question Daniel kicked off with what are the trends of the year? And that's 2020 for me, the dumpster fire, the weight that is on us. So in this thread, let's do a round robin of just a tip. What are some tips for working effectively from home? Daniel, what kind of tips do you have?
Yeah, one thing I've actually done this year was, and it was even pre-pandemic, but I'm so glad I did, was invest in a sit-stand desk. Simple as that may sound, but I'm quite an active person. I love running, for example. But I did find, you know, sitting down for 8 hours a day in a lot of meetings and so forth was getting a bit tiring and, you know, in terms of musculoskeletal as well. So for me, investing in a quality workspace, I know Shane's kind of touched on this, like I'm very lucky I've got like a home office, but investing in quality lights, investing in quality recording equipment so you can see each other when you're chatting on Zoom and so forth, that is definitely a recommendation from me.
What about you, Shane?
We've touched on it. If you're a leader, check in with your people. Take the extra time to take care. And also for yourself as a leader, but also for yourself as a worker, as a contributor in a team, cut yourself some slack. There is no way that in these current circumstances you can be as effective and efficient as you were. Allow yourself to, okay, take that little bit of time out. We're coming up to a holiday season. You won't be going anywhere necessarily, but take the time to turn off from as much of the external pressure as you can. And really, mindfulness, meditation, self-care, these things do really, really matter. And they're stuff that many of us might not have necessarily wanted to embrace previously, but they've become really, really important. And they have always been important, but now it's becoming clear and obvious. And there's a lot of resources in that mindfulness space that is worth getting your hands on and looking at.
Yeah, big plus one on mindfulness, Shane. I really got into this in meditation when I was at university, and it has paid dividends this year. I really try hard to meditate each morning, and also I take some time out during a lunch break that I schedule on my calendar every day too.
I would add to that, have a routine that involves us, A, taking regular breaks during the day. If your current local laws allow, get outside, go for a walk, do something that's not sitting in your house. And the other thing which I started doing this year, which I hadn't done before, and I hugely, hugely recommend it, is I effectively have a computer and phone ban from about 6 o'clock in the evening onwards, which is quite early. So at about 6 o'clock, I sit down with the family, we have a meal together. And then once I've got my children into bed, I then, if I want to do something, I'll read a book, but I won't pick up my telephone and start messing around with Twitter or whatever, which I used to do all the time. And for me personally, that's been a big and worthwhile change. It requires a bit of discipline. But I mean, I think that general point of making time for yourself, take breaks during the day, don't spend all day every day in the same room staring at a screen, I think is all really good and really important. Wes, how about you?
Mine goes back even pre-COVID. So this one comes all the way back, and I know I've said it before. I don't know if I've ever said it on the podcast, but Dave Copeland, at the time he was at Stitch Fix. He's at a startup now, but he did a talk on remote working probably 2 years ago. And the one thing that I remember from his talk still to this day was assume good intent. It's so easy to just, you don't have the facial recognition, the body language, the nonverbal communication that we have when you're in an office setting. So you just have to read an email. Maybe it's a short, terse response, and I can get my feelings hurt, and I cannot assume good intent. So one of the mantras that I continually say when I read emails is assume good intent. How should I be reading this? And rather than taking offense, I try to do that.
It's a slightly ironic thing to someone who's spent the last 6 years basically working on written content. But as a medium for communication, written content is terrible, particularly things like Slack and Twitter and, you know, instant messaging things, but email as well, because you don't hear inflection, you don't see body language. It's so easy to misinterpret and misunderstand. Think how often you've seen two people get cross with each other on Slack, and you get them in a Zoom call in a room, effectively, and magically the whole problem just goes away. It's like, it's so important. So yeah, assume good intent is a really good one, I think.
So we are coming up on some hard stops here for us. So maybe New Year's resolutions, looking forward 2020, what we should focus on. What do you think? Daniel, you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure thing. And I think the irony this year is I'm saying I want to do more travel. I think all of us last year were saying we're going to do less travel, right? And we got our wish.
Some would be nice, yeah.
Well, hey, at least you met your New Year's resolution, Daniel. You said you wanted to do less travel. You got it.
First time for everything, Wes, right? I was forced.
A bit more brutal than we intended, but yeah, that worked.
Yeah, I was forced for this. But there we go. But and it all comes out, it's a common theme we've all been saying here. It's the connecting with the people. I am an introvert at heart. I love my technology, but I love the people as well. I love the community. It's why I do it these days. So for me, it's all about connecting with people, connecting with the communities again, and definitely looking forward to actually building on my learning around communities and on leadership next year, I think, as I'm changing roles slightly as well. Yeah, that's my sort of, I think, tip for the year. Charles, how about yourself?
One of the things that I'm trying to do, which is kind of personal, is I'm trying to spend more time writing music. So as soon as I'm actually allowed to get together with my muso buddies again, I've missed that probably more than anything else in the last year. So I'm going to record another album next year. That's my like one major ambition, which was supposed to happen this year, but obviously the issues meant that that didn't happen. So that's like my one big thing really for me for next year on a personal level. Wes, how about you?
Just to underscore Daniel's comments, we've been away from so many people, so definitely reinforcing some relationships and making sure that we all get this vaccine and can get back out there and can connect to people and really just be present in those moments and not take them for granted like we maybe did in years past or like I maybe did. On the technology front, I'm probably going to do a bit more and just getting back to basics personally. You know, I've been working at higher levels of late, so I want to just really dive back in and get down dirty again with Java and Spring, for example. Go the next level, particularly in security aspect when it comes to Kubernetes. That recent security certification, for example, is of interest to me for Kubernetes. So I'll probably do that. I obviously already mentioned Containerd. I'm going to spend some more time looking at some of the container runtimes and kind of diving down deep. That's probably what I'll be doing. Shane?
Well, one, just looking forward to getting together with people in person at some point. QCon Plus was fantastic. QCon in person is going to be more fun still. For me personally, next year, I'm hoping to be in a time of growing in understanding people better. I've signed up for a professional coaching training course where I'm going to work towards one of the International Coach Federation certifications. I feel that these are competencies that will help me help others more effectively. So that's where I want to go and be there to help others more effectively.
So wrapping up, could we all share a final thought or tip for 2021, please?
Yeah, I think that the trend here is kind of decidedly different than we've had on these wrap-ups. We didn't really talk very much about technology. We talked about people and we talked about giving yourself permission to just kind of recognize this indescribable stress that we're all under and give your space just permission to realize it. My final thought is in that space. It's to remember that relationships are important. Work hard to mature those, even if it's in a virtual way. Have those virtual one-on-ones, coffee. Have one-on-ones with your colleagues, but just make that time for the personal connection that we're losing because of this COVID. Have empathy for people by assuming good intent, right? You don't know what kind of stress they're under. You don't know any of these things because you just have this little window, this two-dimensional window that we're all operating on. So yeah, my one piece of advice is assume good intent, and I guess two pieces of advice, and give yourself permission to realize this is just an unprecedented time. Shane?
The technology is almost easy compared to the people stuff. And if there's one piece of advice building on what Wes said, it's be kind. Be kind to yourself and be kind to others. This is a time when we need kindness in the world. Charles?
I think that's a tremendous sentiment, to be honest. I completely agree with that. And the only other thing I would say is, as soon as you're offered a vaccine, go and get the vaccine. Vaccines are awesome. They work. And the sooner we all get one, the sooner life can start returning, hopefully, to normal. So yeah, get vaccinated as soon as you're allowed. Daniel?
Yeah, so I'll conclude by saying a big thank you, of course, to all three of you. It's been a lot of fun over the last year. Big thanks to all the awesome InfoQ staff behind the scenes, to all our guests that have joined us over the last year. And of course, a big thanks to all the listeners. You know, we couldn't do it without you. I'll also mention, if listeners are looking for a deep dive into more of the technical trends we've seen in 2020, we are publishing a lot of related content at InfoQ.com in December and January. We're doing a 2020 year in review eMag, a couple of new articles and some other things as well. So do pop over to InfoQ.com.
Yeah, so just from me personally to all of you, thank you for joining us on the InfoQ podcast this year and the InfoQ culture podcast this year. Speaking for all four of us, if I deign to, this is an amazing privilege and honor to be able to do these and chat with people that we all deeply admire and respect. And that wouldn't be possible without all of you out there listening, stopping us in the hallways when we can meet in person or virtually in the chat rooms when we're online and just talking about the podcast. So thank you for giving us all the opportunity. And to the three of you, thank you. It's a privilege and an honor to work with you all and even be mentioned in the same breath. So I hope you have a good remaining 2020, if that's even possible. And I look forward to forgetting about 2020 and having an amazing 2021.